Good morning, everyone. Nice to see you all. Reading from today's Master Course lesson, which is lesson 53, starting with Dancing with Shiva. Does hell really exist? Is there a Satan? There is no eternal hell, nor is there a Satan. However, there are hellish states of mind and woeful births for those who think and act wrongfully, temporary tormenting conditions that lift the fiery forces within. Vatsya. Hell, termed Naraka, is the lower astral realm of the seven chakras below the Muladhara. It is a place of fire and heat, anguish and dismay, confusion, despair and depression. Here, anger, jealousy, argument, mental conflict and tormenting moods plague the mind. Access to hell is brought about by our own thoughts, words, deeds and emotions. Suppressed antagonistic feelings that court demons and their aggressive forces. Hell is not eternal, nor is there a Satan who tempts man and opposes God's power, though there are devilish beings called Asuras, immature souls caught in the abyss of deception and hurtfulness. We do not have to die to suffer the Naraka regions, for hellish states of mind are also experienced in the physical world. We do die in a hellish state of consciousness, burdened by unresolved hatred, remorse, resentment, fear, and distorted patterns of thought. We arrive in Naraka fully equipped to join others in this temporary astral purgatory. The Vedas say, sunless and demonic, verily are those worlds and enveloped in blinding darkness, to which all those people who are enemies of their own souls go after death. This is following the Dancing with Shiva verse on sin. That's why it's written like it is. If it was in another context, I think what Gurudeva would have done is parallel it to heaven. But he, because of the context, he didn't do that. The same principle applies there. The basic principle is that what happens after we die, as Gurudeva explains, well, we carry on basically as the same person. The only thing that happens is we don't have a physical body anymore, and we're able to experience the astral world more fully than we are now. But basically we're the same person. We're maintaining the same state of mind. We don't change our state of mind as we drop off the physical body. That's the important thing. And it's where Hinduism differs, in that there's no big change at the end of life and going along one way, and then at the end of life when we drop off the physical body, there's some tremendous reward or some tremendous punishment and everything changes. No, we say, no, it's just carry on. So the state of mind you're in the present is the state of mind you'll be in the inner worlds. To develop the point I was making at the beginning, the hellish experience starts right here with a hellish state of mind. And the parallel to that is the heavenly experience starts right here with a heavenly state of mind. And that's what we want to focus on, is being in the states of mind produced by the higher chakras rather than the lower ones. J. just becoming acquainted with the path to enlightenment, may wonder where he is, how much he has achieved so far. There are a few cardinal signposts he may identify with to know he has touched into the inner realms of his mind. Should he ever have experienced a here and now consciousness, causing him to fight the where and when of the future and the there and then of the past afterwards, he can fully impart to himself an award of having achieved some attainment by striving even more diligently than before. So those are nice phrases. Here and now, where and when, there and then. And it points out an important part of being in an inner state of consciousness or a heavenly state of consciousness, which is not unnecessarily thinking about the past and the future, or even the present. Maybe we should just say not unnecessarily thinking. That's more complete. Thinking of trying to weave this idea into a publisher's desk somehow. I haven't quite figured out how, but I've become more aware of talking to people that some people are constantly thinking. They never stop thinking. You know, even in their meditation, they have trouble stopping thinking because they're always thinking when they're not meditating. They've come to think that that's the way they're supposed to be. I'm alive, so I think. Constantly analyzing the present, thinking about the past, thinking about the future. And of course, if we're constantly thinking, it means when we sit down to meditate, there's a strong tendency to continue constantly thinking. It's harder to control our meditations if we're constantly thinking in our ordinary state of mind. Well, that's not helpful. It also takes us out of the present moment. When we think about the past unnecessarily or the future unnecessarily, it's taking us out of the present, it's taking us out of a deeper experience of the present moment, which Gurudeva calls the eternal now. Being really deeply experiencing the innerness of the present moment. Not thinking about it, just experiencing it. Eternal now. So for some people that's a new idea, that there's no need to be constantly thinking. Of course, in Gurudeva's writings, it's quite clear. And the way I generally explain it is, there's no need to think about the past or think about the future. There should be a reason to do so. There should be a benefit. We're going there for a reason. We're not just going there out of habit. We're going there for a reason. We're utilizing the intellectual mind to go into the past for a reason or to go into the future for a reason. So it's like utilizing the internet. First thing you realize when you use the internet is you better have a plan. I'm going here for this reason. Then I'm coming back, I'm stopping. Otherwise, you know, you just keep going, one thing leads to another, an advertisement leads to you buying something, you know. It can be totally ramifying. So we're utilizing the internet, I'm going to Google search, and I want to find out this information, and when I find out the information, I'm done using the internet. Well, likewise with our thinking mind, I'm going into the future to plan out this activity, but when it's planned out, I'll just stop thinking about the future. I'll just enjoy the present. The ability to see the world as transparent, a game, a dream, encourages the aspirant to seek deeper. The moon-like light within the center of the head appears during his tries at meditation, sometimes giving him the perceptive ability to cognize the intricate workings of another's external and subconscious states of mind, as well as his own. The ability of the ardent soul to recognize his guru and identify himself in the actinic flow from whence the master infuses knowledge by causing inner doors to open is another signpost that the aspirant has become an experiencer and is touching in on the fringe or perimeter of transcendental states of mind. Many on the path to enlightenment will be able to identify through their personal experience some of these signposts and recall many happenings that occurred during their awakenings. But remember, the recall and experience are quite different. The experience is here and now. The recall is there and then. That's an important point, is the actual experience, an inner experience, is much more powerful, much more of a higher consciousness than the recall of it. Recalling it is quite different than the actual experience. In other words, we're not supposed to have a mystical experience, say 10 years ago, and then the rest of our spiritual life is telling people about the experience we had 10 years ago. That doesn't count. That happened 10 years ago, but we're supposed to have it again today and tomorrow and the next day. It's not supposed to just be a one-time event. After acquiring this ability to consciously live superconsciously comes the ability to work accurately and enthusiastically in the material world while holding the intensity of the inner light, giving perceptive awareness of its mechanical structure. Probably a good last point to make. Emphasize is work accurately and enthusiastically in the material world. As Gurudev explains in the Master Course introduction, it says it's common for those who are new to spiritual path to withdraw from the world, or think they should withdraw from the world. The world's a worldly place, and I'm interested in spiritual progress, therefore I should be put less attention into the world. And Gurudev's point is not to fall into that idea, but rather, as he says here, work accurately and enthusiastically. In other words, the world is a place where we can improve our concentration and willpower, improve our ability to start and finish things. And those abilities are useful in our inner life as well. But we don't want to think of the world as something to withdraw from. Rather, we want to use it as an opportunity to improve our concentration and willpower through doing things accurately and enthusiastically. Om Namah Shivaya. Thank you very much.